Welcome everyone to Milking It Podcast, the podcast that tucks the teeth of popular culture until it explodes all over your face. As always, I'm David Davis.
And
he's a man. Such a man.
Such a man.
It's me, it's Poulamon.
And here we are, yes, it's episode 47. Can you imagine episode 47? Fuck me, it took long enough for us to get here. it has been a while, we're both very aware of that. We will talk more about that in a second, but we're going to also talk about the geeky stuff that's been going on since the last time we spoke.
If anything, Dave, it's been a welcome break for our milkers because we've now got so much geeky goodness to catch up on. It's going to be a bumper one, so it's going to be a good chat. So get ready, have a seat, roll up that cigarette, crack open a beer, pour your coffee. It's us. We're back. It's the Milking It Podcast.
Woo! Okay, so yes, we are finally back together. It's taken us a while to get all things sorted out. As we always say here on the Milking It Podcast, real life gets in the way. This is going to be a bit of a sort of hodgepodge of an episode, I imagine, because there is plenty for us to talk about. However, it would be excuse me.
We're definitely back. Dave's already belching.
There we go. Yeah, we are back. So it would be unbeknownst for me not to mention something that's happened while we've been away. So it's been about 5 or 6 weeks, I think. Possibly.
Yeah, it's been like an early summer holiday for us, for the milksters as well.
Yeah, okay, so we're behaving like teachers. We took
mid-season break, I believe the Americans call it.
Oh, okay, we're like Gotham then. So we'll come back and we'll be, and we'll be shit.
Like Gotham, sans the whimsy.
So basically, we've been away. Bits and pieces have been happening, both of our lives, everything else. However, also something happening in the multiverse. We're going to mention it very quickly, sort of very briefly, so you guys know what's happening. Most of you who listen to the Milking It Podcast, I know, also listen to our sister podcast, which is the Totally Insane Tape Show. That has been put on hiatus, I believe. Mr. Dino Peppers has left Facebook. He's the guy who does all of our artwork, a friend of the show, and has been on the show many times. But so Boo, would you like to address very briefly, the Totally Insane Tape Show is no longer.
It is no longer for the time being. Yep. Dean is just getting busier and busier with, he's a very, very talented creative artist, and It's basically we have to spend a lot of time doing the Totally Insane Tape Show, and he does basically 99% of the work. All I do is talk, and I do understand that he does have other things to be getting on with. I'm very proud of what we achieved with the Totally Insane Tape Show. We've got a lot of listeners, a lot of good friends out of it, and that's not to say that we might never be back, but who knows? But for now, it's going to be all on Milking It. But the Totally Insane Tape Show was brilliant while it lasted, and who knows, we may have a tits reunion coming up in the future. And I just want to thank everyone who was involved in that, who listened, downloaded and enjoyed, but fear not, because all of that goodness will be continued right here on the Milking It Podcast.
No, absolutely. And also, it bears saying, if there are any milksters out there who have thought, do you know what, I'd like to do a podcast, I'd like to do something interesting and creative, and I'd like to chit-chat, I'd like to tell my friends about something, then get in contact with us. It's milkingitpodcast@gmail.com, or you can contact us at the milkingitpodcast.com, which is takes you directly to our Facebook, and you can let us know, because there is now a space in the schedule. Now Mr. Boo Lamont and Dino Peppers are no longer involved. Obviously, we can pop it. We have the bandwidth. So if you guys have been waiting to get a podcast out there, then let us know. And hopefully we can help you.
Fuck it. Let's start a new. There is a Star Search contest. We are running the Milking It Voice of the Future contest right here. It's like Tough Enough, but there's more chance of you getting in.
I'd say we can call it rough enough, because I think I think it's milking it rough enough contest. So if you're slightly shit and you think that you want to do a podcast, let us know, because
send us an audio file no longer than 1 minute, filmed horizontally.
We don't want to be editing those things up. But yes, totally. All seriousness, if there's any milksters out there that want to get involved in podcasting, you haven't got someone to host, and I don't mean me and Bill are going to present it, because we're busy enough, but you guys present it, give us a file, we'll stick it up there, honestly. There has got to be big things in store going forwards on the Milking Podcast.
Someone out there is the future podcast hosting superstar, and we want to hear from you. But as Dave said, hit us up at milkinitpodcast.com or on Twitter at Teat Tugger. You know what we're saying.
Definitely. Teat Tugger. Right, Boo, that's done. We'll move that aside. We'll close the door on that one for the time being.
Let's cover the tits for now.
let's put them away. we are here to talk about the geeky goodness that's been happening while we've been away. There has been so much. So where would you like to begin?
Dave, tell me all about a little series that's been doing the rounds on Netflix, sir.
This is Daredevil, of course.
Dave, I hear it is blinding.
Do you know what?
Blinding.
Sorry, I completely missed that. Yes, Daredevil, which is the new TV series on Netflix. Can you tell it's been a while since we talked to each other?
Yeah.
So basically, Netflix have started this new thing where they are developing with Marvel a series of different Marvel characters. The first one that's come out with its own series is Daredevil, already being commissioned for series two. To be fair, I'm not surprised. I started watching it. Those of you who have listened to the Milking a Podcast before will be aware that I am not a Marvel guy. I'm the DC guy. So, went into it not really knowing much about the character. Kind of remember watching the dreadful Ben Affleck film back in the day. That was as far as I'd kind of got with the Daredevil character. But really good. Really good. First watch, not convinced. Second watch, when I was watching it again, ready to talk about it a little bit for us chit-chatting tonight, really good. I can see why it's getting the praise that it's getting, the critical acclaim that it's getting, because it is just a great series. The characters are so well-defined. The scripting's really tight. It's just a good series. And unfortunately, I have to say this, and I really hate to admit it, Gotham went on a break just before this came out. So Gotham goes on a break. I watch this. I go back to watching Gotham. It kind of ruins Gotham, because
believe the phrases, it pales in comparison.
It absolutely does, sir. It's just so much better. Charlie Cox is an amazing Daredevil, and I cannot praise it enough. The character of Kingpin, Wilson Fisk, Vincent, I can't even remember his
name. D'Onofrio,
there we go. Vincent D'Onofrio plays Wilson Fisk. He's possibly the greatest bad guy in a TV series I have ever seen.
Early reports are telling me that the Kingpin is the greatest villain produced on a Marvel, on anything
he's just
Marvel
perfect.
Have done on screen. Yeah.
Honestly, mate, he's just perfect.
Do you remember how excited I was when he was announced as the Kingpin?
Yeah.
Remember, I went absolutely nuts because he's a fantastic actor. If you've been living under a rock for the last few years, we're talking. He was in Full Metal Jackets. He was Private Piles. Remember that shit?
Yeah. Oh,
dark. But he's a fantastic actor. I've always been a fan. I believe he was in one of the CSIs as well. I think I am thinking of Law and Order.
Okay, kids.
Law and Order, Criminal Intent, and Men in Black. He was the bad guy in Men in Black 1.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He was at Sugar Water.
Sugar Water.
Guy.
So, yeah, he was in Law and Order, but not CSI as mistakenly. But, yeah, fantastic actor and a chilling Kingpin, I've been told.
He's just perfect. I tell you why he's perfect, because obviously, it's the first season, so no one makes reference to him being Kingpin because it's his kind of journey to becoming the Kingpin.
It's just Wilson Frisky.
He just has this way of delivering the lines that are so dry and so direct that it's really scary, even in the most innocent moments of him talking to characters. You just, and also the moments where he's decapitating people with a car door, which, spoiler alert, but he's just the most menacing presence I've seen on screen for a long time, but you also care for him, and that's the really weird thing to me. It's just so well written, absolutely perfect. I look forward to more of him.
I mean, in the comic books, he's super, like, you know, he doesn't really have a superpower per se, but it's his unbelievable willpower is classed as his right. super. In the Marvel Zombies universe, even though he has been bitten and turned into a zombie, because of his abilities to have extraordinary willpower, he actually stays in control of his body and mind. So he is a zombie, but he's still the Kingpin.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, and I think that's Marvel Zombies 4 from the series. But yeah, that stuck with me because... you know, he is an amazing presence. He's always been one of my favourite villains. As a kid, he was one of the main villains in the Spider-Man animated series from the 90s, and he's just been a fantastic character. So, yeah, I was absolutely on board for day one. The mad thing is, I haven't seen Daredevil yet. I don't really care about spoilers because I know that I'm going to watch it 100% all the way through.
Do you know what... And again, we're probably talking about this a little bit too long, but I would say you of all people will enjoy it because you like the films that I know these filmmakers... Because it's basically a 13-hour film that you're watching. It's up to those standards. You like the films that have influenced these filmmakers because I know you like you sort of Jackie Chan, you Bruce Lee movies... you're a fan of the action films. The end of, episode
that's
two.
That's fine. That everyone's been telling me about.
Alive. That's good.
There is it's a one-shot take fight scene that's taken its inspiration from films like The Raid.
Absolutely.
And apparently it's mind-blowing. I know I'm falling way behind, but I will definitely catch up.
And do you know what? Now you two have shit the bed, I'm going to say it. It's highly recommended.
That is my phrase still.
I look forward to a future episode where we chit chat and you've watched it and you can tell me how good it is because I loved it, and the fact that I loved it and I'm not a DC guy, sorry,
a Marvel guy,
but and I'm not a fan of those kind of movies. I'm not a kung fu fan or fight movie fan, but even I enjoyed it. I like the fact that the fight scenes feel like they matter. It feels like you're watching an actual fight. It doesn't feel like a choreographed kapow, bam, boom kind of TV show.
Not that there's anything wrong with the classic Batman 60s punch kapow.
Of course not. No, I'm a big fan of that. I look forward to the new animated one that we mentioned in the last episode. But I'm just saying it does feel good to watch a gritty TV show that doesn't have to sort of pander to being on TV. So it can be dirty, gritty. There is blood. There is violence. There is gore. And honestly, you need to watch it. Highly recommended.
I will check that. I mean, what's strange to me is that they've announced a series two when this was meant to be a one series
deal, yeah.
Where they go into Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and, oh my God, Iron Fist.
Iron Fist, yeah.
Yes, which will go into the Defenders miniseries.
But then that... I can't blame them for already announcing that because I think that it has been so successful and it was so good that people are clamouring to know, we're definitely going to get another series. Anything else? Considering they dropped every episode on the same day,
yeah,
I haven't binge-watched a series for a long time and I quite happily, literally across 3 days, just watched these... all 13 episodes. And like I say, didn't particularly get it the first time round, went back into it to watch it and just absolutely fell in love with it. Really good. Shits on Gotham. I'm sad to say because I love Gotham and I've really enjoyed the series so far. I need to watch the latest couple of episodes that have just been on, but so far, Marvel are winning.
It's weird. I was so looking forward to Gotham, and then I watched the pilot, and I think I watched the second episode, and I just lost interest, and I think that's terrible. But this is going back to what I was saying to you long before we started recording. I think I said it to you the other day. We are being oversaturated with so much geek stuff all at once that it's trying to find the time to fit it all in.
I think this is the problem as well. I mean, we spoke about when we first started doing the podcast, I think it was probably episode 3 or 4. We were in the same situation with zombie films and zombie TV stuff.
Totally. The oversaturation.
So there were so many projects being launched, but then sort of 60% would fall by the wayside. So it's like, oh, that film was rubbish, or that TV show didn't get past the first series. Or... Completely.
No, Coco, you are right. Coco's basically saying the oversaturation of zombies is ruining his enjoyment. He's not... You're not a hipster, are you? No. Okay. But...
No, I completely agree what he's saying, because...
Coco, you make a coherent point, and one that me and Dave didn't bring up originally. You are right in what you said.
Highly recommended. As
highly recommended.
So...
Said it's getting a bit rough.
But you're at that point where now everything is being developed. Everything is being given the green light. So you've got so many movies going on. You've got so many TV series going on. And pretty much, like, to the point where there was a fucking Guardians of the Galaxy movie, you know.
I wouldn't even say that was the thing of it, Dave. I couldn't believe there was a movie coming out about Thor. And we're talking years ago. I went, what, right. Thor? How on earth are they going to make a movie about Thor? Then I saw it, and for a very long time, it was my favourite Marvel movie.
Yeah, it was. It was a great movie. It was really good.
Kenneth Branagh, Anthony Hopkins, like, are you joking? And Idris Elba? It was Idris Elba's Heimdall, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Excellent. You know I get things wrong all the time, Milkston. He's amazing what gets green. Ant-Man, for fuck's sake. And now with the DC Universe catching up slowly but surely, I mean, let's move on from Daredevil just quickly, Dave. We've both seen the Superman-Batman trailer.
Yeah, yes.
It is dark and brooding and moody.
It's very... Bum, 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 bum. However, I'm excited about the movie. I obviously am. It doesn't take a genius to realise I'm a fan of Batman.
What?
I know. Stop the presses.
It's not an episode of Milking It unless we mention our love of Batman, is it? Let's be honest.
Right. I like Batman. I enjoy the character. I enjoy a lot about the villains and everything else. My issue is I watched the trailer and it reminded me that it's been directed by Zack Snyder. So that concerns me just because his... It just reminded me about Man of Steel, and that wasn't a film I particularly enjoyed. It was okay. It wasn't great. And the fact that they're trying to shoehorn in so many characters, because that's what my brain now says, is, oh, okay, we're setting this up for the Justice League movie, so we're going to have to introduce these different characters of Aquaman and... Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman and Cyborg, etc., etc. So are we going to have these characters shoehorned in, or is it going to be... I don't know. I don't have great faith in this movie.
It just looks so dark, though. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it regardless, because I want to know what they do with it. But it's so gritty, if the trailer's anything to go by. I mean, it's almost Sin City-like, and it's black on... whiteness and black and greyness, even, if you know what I mean.
The sort of monochrome makes sense with Zack Snyder, but yeah.
No, and when Batman looks up and he's like, let's find out if you bleed, kind of thing, and it is almost Sin City-esque in its monotoneness. But how it will continue onto the, you know, Wonder Woman and... because it's set in the future, isn't it? It's an older Batman... And, you know, crazy Superman, it's Dark Knight Returns, isn't it, basically? Like,
Pretty much.
I don't know. I'd be interested to see how they spin it off into into future films, unless they're going to go the way of like alternative dimensions and time paradoxes. And
I don't think the sort of, I think I think comic book readers, we buy the alternative dimension thing because that's a thing that we kind of know exists, and they've done it many times just to get themselves out of writing shitty stories. But I don't think the general public will buy, oh, don't worry, it's an alternative universe kind of line in terms of films. I think the films have to be a definite canon in terms of what they're doing. You know, we know the Nolan Batman is over. We're now starting again. We've got an older Batman. He's the guy who's going to appear in the Suicide Squad. He's the guy who's going to appear in this one versus Superman. So I think generally moviegoers are less likely to go for the whole, oh, it's an alternative universe thing. But I don't know.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Suicide Squad, Dave, because that professionally slips us straight into a quick debate.
Yes.
It's true, as Mr. Kurt Angle once said, they have revealed the first pictures of Jared Leto.
Leto, I think.
Leto.
Yeah.
As the Joker. Yes. Who, in my opinion, looks like Steve-O with some bling teeth.
I think he looks very Marilyn Manson back in the day, but I am a big fan. I like the look. It's one photo. You can't tell anything about the character from one photo, but yeah, I'll take that as my Joker. At least they've done something completely different with him. They've not tried to just do the generic Joker, you know, to get him compared to anyone else. They know, they've realised they've got to do something different. They've got to change the character and go like full pelt. Mm-hmm. I like it.
I think it looks like how the Joker would look as a teenager. I'm not against it, by the way. I think it's pretty cool. And they haven't really, I mean, nobody knows what the Joker's role in Suicide Squad is, because he's not a member of the Suicide Squad. He's he is like a guest character, if anything, in this movie. The movie's got nothing to do, you know, the movie's not about him. He's not the main villain. He's not one of the main characters. He's just somebody that happens to be in this story. And for all I know, they may end up doing the same thing that they did with the Suicide Squad animated movie, where you'll only see him incarcerated in Arkham Asylum.
Completely.
In a way, I don't really mind that.
Not at all. I think that could work extremely well. And if it's half as good as the animated movie, I think we're onto a winner.
But it begs the question, who did his teeth, and who's brave enough to tattoo the Joker? Because he's covered in tattoos, so... Who is,
I like
brave
it though.
Or
it's got
mad
that kind
enough
of Russian mafia look about it, where he's covered in tattoos and stuff. I really like it as a look. I think that's pretty perfect, because you don't know what's going on underneath the Joker's outfit, but that look, to me, that looks good. I like.
No, in fact, that's not to get all creepy on the podcast, but in a weird way, that is the most of the Joker's body that we've ever seen. Like, usually he's completely. It does sound weird, actually. But you know what I mean. Usually, he's seen in like a suit or an Arkham prison jumpsuit, or we've never seen him. So, for we know, the Joker is covered in tattoos.
There is. I can't even remember the name of the trade paperback. The Joker has a really famous picture with, it's the Joker with his back facing you, and he has like a massive koi carp tattoo on his back, and the idea is that yes, he has been tattooed tribally because he's involved with mafia and stuff. I will remember it. I will tweet it, kids.
I'd never heard of that. And that is that's like traditional Yakuza stuff.
Yeah, he's got that kind of Yakuza look about him because he's got the tribal tattoos. Yes, that is like an offshoot that they've done before. So the idea of him being tattooed up is not a new thing. It is a new thing in terms of the cinematic universe. But yeah, I look forward to that. Absolutely. So we're talking, we're trying to whip through the geek news. We're talking about sort of DC and Marvel. Marvel have just released their latest film. Both of us have watched it.
Yes. So If you don't want any spoilers, it's probably best that we say our goodbyes now.
or at least skip ahead 5 minutes.
at least. That's when they skip ahead and they hear, like, the ending. Age of Ultron. I saw it the other day, as did David. And it's restored my faith a little bit in geek and superhero movies. There were no surprises, really. It was everything I wanted it to be and everything I was expecting it to be.
Yeah, completely. It was a paint-by-numbers movie, but it was absolutely brilliantly done. I wasn't a massive fan of the first Avengers. I enjoyed it, but obviously...
Do you know what? I got cussed out of the cinema by some blokes behind a few rows behind us because I watched it and we stood up and we were talking. Everyone talks amongst themselves, you know, in my old town when you go to cinema. And I just went, well, it wasn't as good as Thor. And the bloke was like, what movie did you just watch? And I was like, come on, dude, it wasn't as good as the builder. Proper geek argument in the cinema. But yeah, like Avengers promised so much more, but from now seeing Age of Ultron, I realise that you've got to have an introduction. And that is what the first Avengers was. It was the team working together for the first time. This one, it was the team already established against insurmountable odds. And what I liked is that the danger did feel more real than the danger of the first one. The first one felt like, yeah, they probably can defeat, the Loki and these aliens. Whereas in the sequel, you were like, they are fucked. Like, it's almost like I don't want to give spoilers away, but since we've already warned people, I think that the last hour of the film is absolutely fantastic. And with Ultron's plan coming together, the reveal of Vision, who I thought was excellently done.
Vision is so good, yeah.
Vision is fantastic.
I had no idea about that character. I didn't even know who he was. And since I've obviously watched it, I've kind of Wikipedia'd it and see. But just so good. Absolutely amazing.
One thing I am horrified at was, and again, this is not a spoiler-free zone, kids, so if you haven't seen the movie, I'm about to spoil it for you. Ready? I hated the fact that they killed off Quicksilver. Just like that.
Yeah, I kind of understand that, though. Because needed to die. And thankfully, they didn't go down the usual route of the woman in peril, the woman dies. They went with the guy instead. But, yeah.
In a way, Hawkeye could have been that guy to kill himself, saving someone else, because he's got no standalone film announced. He's probably the weakest member of the team because they've given Black Widow the storyline with the Hulk. She's now a more interesting character.
There was a point about halfway through where, and again, spoiler alert, Black Widow completely becomes that stereotypical Hollywood woman in peril that they have to go and rescue, and she relies on a man coming to help her out. And I'm not getting on any feminist argument. I don't want to have that argument again because we've done it.
A giant green man.
Yes, but he's not when he comes to rescue her.
No,
he's a simple scientist, and he manages to get there, help her out, and get her out of the jail she's in. That kind of jarred with me because I thought they've set this character up to be so strong. And such a strong female character, it really did jar. It was like, oh, okay, so why couldn't it be Hawkeye who's in the jail? It can't. It has to be the solo female character who is captured and put in jail by the men. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it just kind of it really did jar with me because I thought, no, you're presenting this character who you want to then go and make a solo film of everything else, but you're putting her in this situation where she's just that normal Hollywood protagonist of, okay, I'm going to get captured. I need to get rescued by a man.
Hashtag just saying. And of course, we cannot discuss this without the obvious. We've got to talk about the ending. We've got to talk about the introduction of the new lineup of the Avengers.
Yes, yeah.
That is War Machine, Vision, Falcon, Scarlet Witch, mm-hmm. And with Cap America and Black Widow leading the charge. So is that a strong enough... Are those strong enough characters to lead their own movie?
I think it depends what they do with the next Captain... Captain America is the next one up, isn't it? Civil War. So I presume it depends what they do with that in terms of setting up those characters, because they're only as strong as the next film.
So
I found myself in a bizarre situation of buying a Marvel trade paperback.
About to say, Dave, but without giving too much away, is this the new lineup of Avengers who will be fighting Iron Man and his team in the Civil War?
I believe my Spidey senses are tingling, but yes.
Ooh, good drop in, sir.
I actually bought Civil War, the graphic novel / trade paperback.
just in case.
I cannot wait to see it. I genuinely cannot wait to see it on the screen. I'm about a third of the way through, absolutely loving it. It's not convincing me to be a Marvel guy, but it is. It's working its magic, put it that way. It's extremely good, but I cannot recommend Avengers Age of Ultron enough. It really is a great film. Really is.
No, totally. I'm really looking forward to the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So we've talked about the heroes of the Avengers Age of Ultron movie, but we didn't really discuss the villainous Ultron himself. We thought we'd leave it to our man, Jay Hodgkin, to tell you guys all about the villain known as Ultron. Mr. Jay, take it away.
Welcome to another episode of How Shit Works. This week, Ultron. Ultron, it's his age, you know. Or at least it will be when the human-hating metal prick swans onto cinema screens in May, the feisty tart. Yes, he's the antagonist of the second Marvel character All-Stars meet-up in Avengers 2. In tuck biscuit terms of superhero team-up villainy, he's the thin layer of cheese spread betwixt Loki and Thanos. So, why is he so tough, eh? How is this guy going to be any kind of problem for the Hulk, Iron Man, War Machine, the Falcon, Captain America, Black Widow, Thor, Hawkeye, and newcomers the Vision, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, eh? That's a lot of people. He must have balls the size of breeze blocks. Who does this tin pot despot think he is? King swinging dick? Shall we find out so your friends don't laugh at you at the cinema like they used to do in the showers at PE? I speak to thee of 10 facts about Ultron. While you eat quavers, other corn-based cheese snacks are available and actively encouraged. Fact number 1. Ultron first appeared in a 1968 Avengers comic, although initially he was disguised as a mysterious villain called the Crimson Cowl. This sounds like a deeply offensive term for the appearance of a lady's genitalia during a monthly cycle, but fortunately looks nothing like it, because Cheeseless Crust, that was a children's comic from a more innocent bygone age. Fact number 2. In the comics, Ultron was created by Hank Pym, whose movie debut is coming some 3 to 4 months later in the guise of Michael Douglas in Ant-Man. To this end, Ultron's Marvel Cinematic Universe self will have a different creator, in this case franchise stalwart Tony Stark. The seeds for his creation have already been planted in 2013's Iron Man 3, with Tony taking a backseat from hero duties and manufacturing a bunch of suits that operate independently. While it seems like these were destroyed at the end of Iron Man 3, it would appear that some were kept from destruction, and it is from these suits that Ultron appears to originate. Fact number 3. Ultron also created Vision, who will make his debut in this movie. If the movie follows the comics, Vision will initially act as an accomplice to Ultron and an adversary to the Avengers before switching sides. Vision is played in this movie by Paul Bettany, who is actually featured in every single Iron Man movie to date as the voice of Jarvis, Stark's home computer. In a recent interview, Marvel producer Kevin Feige stated that the reason that Bettany was hired in 2007 to voice Jarvis was that one day he may be considered too for the role of Vision due to his symmetrical face mirroring that of a synthetic humanoid. It's good to be handsome, gets your future work. And boy, do they plan these things well in advance. Even God didn't call the hotel in Israel ahead of the birth of his child. Sloppy planning, you daft old deity. Fact number 4. Ultron was the first character in Marvel comic history to use adamantium, the indestructible fictional alloy most commonly associated with Wolverine. Given the rights issues between Fox and Marvel Disney, it looks unlikely that adamantium will be used as Ultron's tough old hide. It's strongly suspected that Ultron will instead be made of vibranium, the same material used to make Captain America's shield. Fact number 5. In the comics, Ultron has been destroyed many times. However, Ultron always finds a way to reconstruct himself when the Avengers need a good old pain in the bottom. These incarnations always have slightly different personalities. Starting with the first one, Ultron 5, in the mid-60s, they've now got as far as Ultron 18, notwithstanding numerous unnumbered versions of him. Indeed, a story set in the distant future has an Ultron 54. That's more than 3! You just try and count to 54. It's nearly impossible. You'll lose count. Don't do it, man. Don't do it. It'll ruin your frickin' day. Fact number 6. Ultron has been fired into deep space in the comics by the Avengers, which seems an excellent way to get rid of the invincible, genocidal, maniac bastard face. That is, until he takes control of a biomechanical army called the Phalanx, and plans to destroy all life in the universe rather than just mankind. Oopsie. He's ultimately destroyed by the Guardians of the Galaxy in the comics, which could make a possible storyline for the Guardian sequel, couldn't it? Depending on how they handle the defeat of Ultron in Avengers 2. Let's hope it is. We love those Guardians boys, don't we? Fact number 7. Something I suspect that will be left out of Age of Ultron are the constant comic book references to the Greek myth, the Oedipus Complex. Yes, that one about getting stalk on about your mum. Incest is best? Give it a rest. You see, Ultron really rather resents his so-called father, Hank Pym, for rejecting him, and is rather too fond of his mother, the Wasp. He makes a robotic clone of her to have as his wife. Okay then, and she's called Jocasta, which is Oedipus's mum in the myth. Oh, and Ultron also creates a son of sorts called Antigone. Antigone is the son of Oedipus and mummy dearest Jocasta in the myth. Sweet giant Gonzales. If it wasn't for the fact these were comic book robots, I'd be vomiting and all masturbating right about now. Fact number 8. And if you think that's odd mental behaviour, Ultron recently imported his consciousness into Iron Man's suit and reconstructed himself from within to make himself resemble the Wasp, only completely nude. Yeah, his mum. Enjoy buying that figure in Toys R Us, parents. Fact number 9. In the most recent comic book series called Age of Ultron, the titular shitbag actually succeeds and wipes out the whole of humanity using an army of clones of himself. Only Wolverine and Sue Storm survive and travel back in time to kill Hank Pym in order to stop Ultron from ever being created. Not only would Fox movies probably like this storyline not to happen due to the use of two of its properties, but Messrs. Cameron and Schwarzenegger will probably be on the phone to their lawyers too. I suspect a different, less catastrophic outcome in the upcoming movie with 100% less X-Men and Fantastic Four members. Just a hunch. And our last fact. Avengers Age of Ultron director Joss Whedon has said this of his movie's eponymous threat. Ultron is not a creature of logic. He's a robot who's genuinely disturbed. We're finding out what makes him menacing, at the same time endearing and funny and strange and unexpected, and everything a robot of this type in movies never usually are. I don't know about you kids, but that's the basis of a compelling big bad. Age of Ultron is released on the 1st of May, and you will go and see it. Yes, you will. Now, back the fuzz off, homegirl.
Well, it's been a hectic 4 weeks, really, with Boo and David's sudden rush civil partnership in Hawaii, in which we discovered I make a fucking good bridesmaid. I had a ton of reviews I could have done during their honeymoon in North Korea, but realised I could sum it all up to you in 5 seconds. Dull, tedious, boring, shit, and ooh, new Prodigy album. But seeing as my reviews are still in reality, in their infancy, I can do whatever I want, really. So today's review is going to be a live review. Two reasons. One, the idea associated with a fan base who's predominantly in that awkward age of 17 to 22, who talk about hate and pain. Yet get all girly over an anime scare me immensely. And two, I want to prove to you that I'm not some weird troll that just stays indoors. I'm a weird troll that also goes out from time to time. You may have remembered me ranting in the Papa Roach review eons ago, where petrol was 1p to the gallon, there were orange groves far as the eye can see, mentioning about In This Moment, or rather my moan that Maria Brink is a sexy looking musical Jim Broadbent. Appears to be in everything, but fuck if you know who he actually is. Well, I went to see her live, along with the rest of her band, but fuck if I know their names, because when you go to see In This Moment, you go to see Maria Brink. You could put Brian May on triangle, Jeremy Clarkson as a bongo player, and Keith Chegwin on the flute, and no one would batter an eyelid. But we'll all collectively masturbate, figuratively and, in some places, literally, to Maria Brink. The gig itself was set in the London Coco, a luxurious little venue on the outskirts of Camden, where even the drinks were at a luxurious price of £5.50 for a can of Red Stripe. When you're stuck in a venue with only your sanity and one mediocre opener act and a ghastly second act to follow, drinking should be your last bastion of refuge, but fuck me. Do you know what the wage of a creative arts teacher is these days? I've got fucking print sticks and A3 sketchbooks that I've got to invest in and try and make my flailing freelance graphic design look somewhat glamorous to my impressionable teenage students. The first act was Starset, a techno-pop outfit where the band dressed in Prometheus-style spacesuits and the singer turned up in a James Bond-style tux and wielding some weird Star Trek-style synth machine. It was touchscreen and see-through, and I found the whole thing quite enjoyable to watch. The contraption, that was, not the band. Okay, that may be a little bit harsh. The band were okay, it was catchy enough, but it just wasn't very memorable. A typical safe pop rock band that thinks synths are so hardcore. Ooh, check us out, we're totally like Nine Inch Nails. Yeah, that may be true, but you're not even a crusty spunk stain on Trent Reznor's boxers and don't have anything near the aggressiveness. Look, come back when you all had a 7-year drug binge and maybe we'll talk again soon. Second act was Fearless Vampire Killers, a band that hail from, in their words, just up the road. Convenient, as I found their music to be less than middle of the road in terms of overall music style. Without trying to slate them all in one word and give them some poetic justice, the problem was that they were, well, 10 years too late to the emo party. And overall, I heard all this in 2005. Unoriginal, uninspired, and just plain dull. They even managed to make Elton John's I'm Still Standing sound incredibly dull. It was then I got to the point of no return and I had to give that student bartender £5.50 of that cold hard cash for that Red Stripe, to much of my disappointment and chagrin. But thankfully, the wait was over, and for the next hour and a half, I was indulged by bright colours, sounds booming from a PA for atmosphere, and choreographed dances. I don't know if you've ever been to a metal gig before, but choreographed dancers are not the norm. But if it's any consolation, it actually complemented In This Moment's musical style very well. The songs played were mainly from their latest releases, Black Widow and their previous album Blood. So hardcore fans like myself may have been a bit disappointed that songs like Burn or Gun Show was not played, but having a tight set list with two albums worked very well. My only complaint really was the overall energy of the show. Just when I was getting into the gig, Maria Brink would pop off to a cage wardrobe behind her and change into another costume. It was a costume per song, which for me really sucked a lot of the energy out of the show. It probably is just a nitpick, but it's a criticism nonetheless, and I do feel I'm not doing my job if I don't indulge in at least one negative comment, because like all critics, I'm a measly shell of a man that likes to get his kicks off your tears of streaming hatred. The gig overall was fun and packed plenty of atmosphere despite my nitpicks. And, well, for £12.50 a ticket, I certainly got my money's worth, even if the piss-weak beer was overpriced. And the crowd were the rudest little fuckers I ever met on the fucking planet. I would certainly recommend this band, though, for those who like their visuals to go with their music. Like mild-level autistic people or stoners. But I would also recommend getting stupidly drunk on the train on the way to the gig so you don't have to put up with the androgynous shite of opener acts. And I would also enforce that you don't get a cat drunk on gin and never put a fork in a toaster. Consider these your life lessons for the week. Now, piss off until the next time we talk musical bollocks for a few minutes, and for the love of Christ, do what I'm not doing, and go and enjoy your fucking lives.
And we thought we'd round off this week's show with a little bit of quick bits of geek news that have only recently been announced, so we don't know too much about them, but we do want to have a little chat about them. First things first, something I know you're not majorly upset by, Dave, but something I'm devastated by. Last year, a little demo hit the PlayStation Network for the PS4 called the PT Demo, and for a couple of days, people were very confused as to what this was. This terrifying first-person puzzle game had you walking the same corridor over and over, but weird things kept happening over and over again. Jump scares are plenty. Mystery, it was just something special. And when you finished this demo, your reward was a video of Norman Reedus in-game walking around Silent Hill with the announcement that the game is being made by Hideo Kojima and Guillermo del Toro. This is a horror fan's wet dream, my friends, and we have been excited about everything to do with Silent Hills. Well, slowly but surely, less news came through. Hideo Kojima left Konami, and eventually it was down to Guillermo del Toro and Norman Reedus themselves to reveal the devastating news that Silent Hills has officially been cancelled. This is gutting. I can't tell you how bad this is. This was going to revamp the entire survival horror genre in a whole new cinematic way. And that's only from the little bits of what we saw. It was a class move to get Kojima, one of the greatest storytellers in video game history, and Guillermo del Toro, one of the most imaginative filmmakers of our generation, to collaborate to make this game. It's a massive disappointment, and it leaves a big gap in the horror game genre. And I, for one, am very disappointed that Konami have done this. In fact, Konami aren't doing too well. They've just taken themselves off the stock exchange, and there's a big fear that they may be going the way of the Sega consoles. So I'll keep my fingers crossed. Let's hope Metal Gear Solid does the numbers for them. But Silent Hills, I'm afraid, my friends, has been cancelled.
That is gutting, as you say, for people who are fans of that sort of that franchise. I must admit, As you said at the start, I'm not a big fan, so I'm.
It's not that you're not a fan; it's just that you've not had the opportunity to experience Silent Hill 1
or 2.
Yeah,
maybe so. I remember the Sean Bean film that was back in the day.
Doesn't count.
But I must admit, a game I have been playing this week is Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat! Ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding
fighting game kind of guy. It's not my kind of game at all. I wouldn't have got into it unless my mate's been playing it, so we've been playing each other online. So, honestly, it's really good. That Injustice was turned up to 11 with horrible X-ray brutality moves and fatality moves. There's some bits that I've had to look away because I am a massive wuss. But I recommend it, definitely. Highly recommend it.
That's my line, one. I really enjoyed Injustice, and you could see the Mortal Kombat Origins on it. In fact, the game before was DC versus... was it Mortal Kombat versus Mortal DC? Kombat was that DC. And then Injustice was fantastic. I have that on the complete version on the PS4, and you can play as Scorpion, and I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. And you know, they really hit the mark with their cinematic moves. The finishes were incredible, where you'd punch them up into space and then punch them down again, or the Flash would run around the world. So I was fascinated to see what they'd do in this gory context. And they really came through. The X-ray moves are absolutely brutal. And the fatalities are something else. I love the new Mortal Kombat. Fighting games for me got really stale. I think the pinnacle for me was when Marvel vs. Capcom 3 came out. I realised that there's only so much you can do with the new kind of hardware. You know, Street Fighter and kind of those 2D fighting games, they were good because they were 2D and they were pushing the limits of what was available then. And it didn't translate so well into the modern consoles. But this resurgence with, like, as we said, Injustice and the new Mortal Kombat just leaves me gagging for Injustice 2.
Oh, honestly, check out the Mortal Kombat because it's so good. It is really good. You of all people, would enjoy it because you like your horror films. You like a bit of gore.
And Jason Voorhees is an unlockable character, as is the Predator.
Apparently so, yes. On disc unlockable, which is the controversy, which is currently...
Dirty.
Dirty DLC.
The DLC.
Yes. Yeah.
The dirty den of video games. Dirty DLC.
Completely. But anyway, moving on. Quick news, kids.
Very, very excited, Dave, today. Sorry, let me start again. Very excited, David, because today Dave announced... It got confusing there. Dave, the TV channel, not my erstwhile co-host of the Milk and It podcast.
Hello.
Dave didn't announce to me that Red Dwarf 11 and 12 is coming out. The channel, Dave, sent out a teaser on YouTube announcing, heralding, if you will, the announcement that Red Dwarf series 11 and 12 will be hitting our screens 2016 and 2017 with the tagline, "We're home, Rimmer." So that is exciting. Oh,
is it?
In the same way as you would rather have an all-female shitty-led Ghostbusters movie than no Ghostbusters, yeah. I would rather have a David.
You'd rather have me playing every character in a brand new Red Dwarf. It's all gone. Very strange. Yes.
An excellent Crichton impression.
Thank you.
Double rimmer salute for you, sir. No,
what?
I would rather...
that means something completely different to my people.
big fans of those rimmers.
Amen, bro.
Oh, it's all gone slightly. Anyway, yes, I would rather have a Dave-produced Red Dwarf than no produced Red Dwarf. Series 10 was all right, man. It was all right.
No, it wasn't.
It was fucking awful. It was better than no Red Dwarf. There were a couple of episodes which were fine. And I would be interested to see what they do with 11 and 12, because no matter what I say, I am a dedicated dwarfer, and I will end up watching series 11 and 12, even if it got the worst reviews on the planet. It is something I have to see for myself. So, yeah, not just one, but two series of Red Dwarf announced for 2016 and 2017.
To be fair, though, two series in the UK, obviously for US fans, that means basically 12 episodes.
Yeah.
So compared to that's a normal kind of season for the States.
Yes,
so,
for our American milksters.
Basically,
yeah.
They've said, we're going to write a new season. So, but... Really? I would rather have nothing than a half-assed series.
I don't even think it's sullying the memory because it's a comedy.
I don't think you can, you know, it's... I don't know. Unless...
I'm looking forward to it. It's not like they're bringing the British Empire back, is it, David? So...
No, it's not like they're saying, oh, we're going to do a new series of Bottom.
Oh, Dave, don't... Oh. As I said, I was watching some old Rick Mayall last night doing his...
Such a great stand-up and such a great character actor.
Yeah. We miss you, Rick. You were really, really great.
Right. Final piece of good news so, this week.
Sorry, just before we move on, just the last thing I'll say about Rick Mallet is it made me piss myself last night. He does a character called Richard Turvey, and he goes, why does Margaret Thatcher wear barbed wire knickers? She doesn't, it's a joke. And for some reason... For some reason, it just grabbed. As they said in Bottom, alternative comedy is alive and well. Well, the last bit of news, Dave, and I'm not going to start a whole fucking debate about this. Let's start with the one. Let's start with the news. It's a movie I haven't got to see yet. 21 and 22 Jump Street with Jonah Hill. So I'm not going to get into a whole thing about this. First of all, they've announced that there's going to be a crossover movie with the Men in Black. I love the Men in Black movies. I thought the first two were fantastic. The third one, it was different, but it kind of stood on its own merits. But loved the first one. I mean, the first one was something else. Will Smith getting a lot of shout-outs this episode. Anyway, but they've announced... Yeah, they've announced that 21 Jump Street and Men in Black are going to have a crossover movie. As I said, I haven't seen 21 or 22 Jump Street. It's Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill, fannying about, as you do. for all I know, that could be fantastic. They've also just announced an entirely female-orientated 21 Jump Street. Mm-hmm. No, but again, I haven't seen the source material. For all I know, that could make the movie a lot better. But I must quickly say... long-time listeners will know that I'm definitely against all this. The gender segregation movies. Why can't there be a female and male-led movie about 21 Jump Street? We don't need these female or male-centric announcements. There are movies for women and there are movies for men, but they've never said, like when they announced Pretty Woman, they didn't go, we're going to be releasing a female-led film about a prostitute with a heart of gold. It's just a movie. And of course, there's the you can make all the traditional jokes of, you know, there's going to be all these remakes, the Warlocks of Eastwick, which I think would be a wicked movie, by the way. The Brotherhood of the Traveling Pants with Robert De Niro. Again, something I'm not massively interested in, but I would be not doing my duty as a podcast show host if I didn't mention.
Yes.
Pod show host, yes, to mention this, these announcements. I'm probably going to go and watch 21 Jump Street, and if it's any good, maybe I'll come back on in the next episode and go mad that there's a female-led one, but who knows? I'm more interested in seeing the Men in Black one personally.
I would say, watch 21 Jump Street. It's okay. It's not great. It's kind of a traditional sort of, like you say, male-led comedy. But with them and Men in Black together, that sounds like a very desperate attempt to save Men in Black, because 21 Jump Street did really well. Men in Black 3 didn't. So
that's what I was going to say. Did they really think they're going to get Tommy Lee Jones out for that? So that was episode 47 of the Milking It podcast with me and Mr. David Davis. We want to thank everyone who's listened over the time. We want to thank all the milksers out there. Of course, we always thank Mr. Dino Peppers, former host of the Tackling Saints Tape Show and friend of the show for the artwork. We want to thank John Sand, as always, for the fantastic music. Love the theme tune, as does everyone. We want to thank Jay. We want to thank Nick for their drop-ins, which are always awesome. So until next time, from me and the D, it's goodbye and join us next week.
Bye.
Peace out, y'all. Player.
You wanna milk it and you know.